You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. The NFL Podcast with Gil Alexander and Dave Kelner.
Hello, everyone. A warm welcome along to the latest edition of the NFL podcast here with William Hill as we move into week number 12 in the National Football League. Good to have you with us. Dave Kelner here in the studio in the UK and live from the East Coast of America this weekend. It's our good friend Gil Alexander, the host of the Megapod and the Guessing the Lines podcast. First of all, a warm welcome to Gil, who's live from Washington, D.C. on this Friday morning. Good morning to you, Gil.
Good morning, Dave, and from the U.S., happy Thanksgiving to all of you in the U.K.
It sort of made its way over here now, Thanksgiving, Gil. There are Thanksgiving parties, and if you're interested in the American football this side of the Atlantic Ocean, there is always somewhere to go and eat and watch American football. So you've infiltrated, Gil.
Well, you know, we tend to do these things, being Americans, but it is the perfect holiday. It's food, family, and football. It really doesn't get much better than that, even if you could have designed it yourself.
We had three Thanksgiving games yesterday, Gil. The Detroit Lions beating the Minnesota Vikings 16 points to 13. The Dallas Cowboys beating the Washington Redskins 31-26. And Pittsburgh doing a number on Indianapolis in the end, winning 28 points to 7. Reflection on those games, first of all, Gil, before we get stuck into our slate here. And we'll start with your Washington Redskins being beaten by 5 points by the Dallas Cowboys. Saw two very, very good National Football League teams there, Gil.
Yeah, we did. I think the Redskins really, for the first time, also kind of showed up, even though Dallas scored 31 points. I mean, it's sort of, you know, a great effort on the Redskins defense. The interior Redskins run defense was very good, despite the fact that Ezekiel Elliott did his thing. And I think the difference in the game ultimately was because the Redskins committed to that run so much, Dak Prescott was able to have some success with play action passes. He was able to convert some key third downs. There was obviously some penalties involved. It didn't help that the Redskins had to settle for field goals in the first half. That certainly didn't help. But, you know, the Redskins prevented the Cowboys from getting any kind of pass rush on Kirk Cousins. And so Cousins went off for 450 yards and just a huge game for him. So, I mean, you know, no shame in that defeat for the Washington Redskins. The Cowboys are just a very, very good football team. And the Redskins at 6-4-1, in a very tough division, in third place in their own division, and will fight for a wild card for the playoffs from here down the stretch.
They will indeed. I mentioned that the Pittsburgh Steelers beat the Indianapolis Colts handily. No Andrew Luck in that game, which was obviously always going to be an impact. And do you think Andrew Luck now, is there any player in the NFL that's worth more as far as the betting line is concerned now than Andrew Luck if he's missing from the Colts team?
Well, I think the quick answer is the guy that was on the other side of the ball last night, Ben Roethlisberger. We have a couple examples already this year where the line move, whether Big Ben was going to be in or out of the lineup, when we had some question heading into a Steelers game that week, also the same amount of points, 6 or 7 points difference, whether it's Ben or his backup, you know, Landry Jones. So I think that would be the quick answer to that question. Those two guys, more than any other two players, and I don't know about more than any other two players, but certainly they're at the top of the list for what they mean to their specific ball clubs. And yesterday, I think in that game, yeah, not only were the Colts behind the proverbial eight ball without Luck, but the Steelers were a team, remember, before the season started that everybody thought would be a Super Bowl contender. And they're in a very weak division, unlike the Redskins, right? They're sort of the opposite of the Redskins. Mm. The Steelers at 500 were already tied for their division going into yesterday. And I think what you see now is the Steelers here down the stretch have the easiest schedule in the NFL. And it began yesterday. They got the break without Luck. So I think you'll see the Steelers coast into the playoffs from here in a weak division.
Let's get stuck into this weekend's matches then, Gil. We start with the Arizona Cardinals at the Atlanta Falcons, and the Cardinals are 9-5 on the money line. The Falcons 5-11. This spread is set at 5 currently. The Cardinals plus 5 at 10-11. The Falcons minus 5 at 10-11. And this spread has been moving north as well. The Falcons were about minus 4 when I checked, and now minus 5, Gil. And the Falcons come into this off a bye. They're 6-4 after losing to the Philadelphia Eagles in Week 10. While the Arizona Cardinals do not look like the same team we saw last season, they're trailing Seattle in the NFC West by 3 games. And I think right now the Cardinals are just fighting to become relevant again, Gil.
I think there's a school of thought for that. You know, on the other hand, you know, I said this about the Arizona-Minnesota game last week. It might not have been the marquee matchup of the week, but it was certainly the most interesting in terms of where those two teams were going. And Arizona lost that game to Minnesota last week, and it was a very frustrating loss for them because Minnesota, if you recall, had an interception return for a touchdown, over a 100-yard return for a touchdown, which Chris Andrews on my podcast, Beating the Book, reminded me that a guy on ESPN referred to it not only as a pick six, but as a pick 12 because the Cardinals were about to score themselves. They also gave up to the Cardinals a kickoff return for a touchdown. So, and they ended up losing that game by 6 points. So that's sort of indicative of not only the Viking season, right? The Vikings on the one hand are only able to win when they get that kind of production from their defense or their special teams, but really the Cardinals' frustration. And so the other way to look at what you're saying is maybe the Cardinals aren't as bad as we think they are. They're just having one of those years where things aren't working out. To your point, though, definitely the difference between this year's Cardinals and last year's Cardinals is the ability to get the ball downfield. Last year, whether it was Larry Fitzgerald, whether it was Michael Floyd, whether it was John Brown, Carson Palmer just seemed to hit these guys deep at will. And he just doesn't make those plays this year. Now, you can blame it on the receivers. You can blame it on the fact that Carson Palmer is going to be 37 years old next month. There's no shame in that. At some point, you know, unless you're Tom Brady or Peyton Manning, these things happen. You get old. And there's no shame in that. And so maybe this was what we should have expected for the Cardinals. But they're just not on all cylinders this year. Doesn't mean they're a bad football team. And I'm going to say this right now. If you give me 5 points here, I think I'm taking the Cardinals, Dave.
And the narrative, as far as the Falcons are concerned, coming into this game is whether or not they are going to drift off into the wilderness as they not have a tendency to do, but as they did last season. They were a team that started the season in scintillating form, but are now 6-4 and still hold a slight advantage in the NFC South, which is a competitive division. It must feel like a must-win game for the Atlanta Falcons, given that the Cardinals aren't coming in maybe firing on all cylinders here. How do you see the Falcons doing from here on out until the end of the regular season?
I think your assessment of the Falcons is dead on. Last year, they started 6-1, and then they finished down the stretch 2-7. So they finished 8-8, missed the playoffs for the third straight season. This year, another fast start. Great offense, and people love offense, right? Matt Ryan and Julio Jones, just spectacular. Ryan, second in passing yards, third in passing touchdowns, fourth in completion percentage. Julio Jones leads the league in receiving yards and is pretty much unstoppable. And so people love offense, and I was mentioning on my show, and I think maybe on yours last week too, where perception is so interesting. People thought of this Falcons team again with a fast start, like, wow, not only is this team headed to the playoffs, coasting to the playoffs, but they could contend for a Super Bowl berth. You know, they quickly forgot about the Cowboys and Seahawks in making that statement. And then you think about a team like the Buccaneers, who are also in the NFC South, and you say, oh, they're not a very good football team. Well, I pointed out last week, you know, the Buccaneers are only one game behind the Falcons in the South. So it just speaks to how we tend to overrate anything good we see and completely underrate anything that we might perceive as negative. And you're right. If the Falcons lose here to the Cardinals, all of a sudden they're 6-5. And those thoughts of last year have to creep into their minds. They're human beings, and they have to know that this is kind of the wrap on them. You know, you get off to these fast starts, but it doesn't mean anything if you're kind of mediocre the rest of the way. So I think this is a tough game for the Cardinals. Now, they play the Redskins next week at home. Oh, excuse me, the Falcons. This is a tough game for the Falcons. And I think the same can be said for the Cardinals, where both of these teams look at this game and have to think, not only is this must win, but it's also a huge opportunity. In the case of the Cardinals, they get Atlanta here, and then they get the Redskins at home next week. All of a sudden, if the Cardinals win those two games, they're right back in the wild card discussion. But this is it. This is the point in the season where it's do or die. When you're 4-5-1 like the Cardinals, and when you're 6-4 like the Falcons, yeah, the Falcons have a little more leeway, but they've got the ghosts of last year to think about as well if they lose.
Taking the points then, the Cardinals plus 5 at 10-11. Are you tempted to sprinkle on the money line, Gil?
I am. I am indeed. Thank you for using the word sprinkle, by the way. Copyright.
Yeah, that's in homage to your podcast, Gil.
Yeah, yes. We have musical background for such things. The sprinkle, for those who don't know, refers to the fact that if you take an underdog, you also put a little on the money line itself in addition to against the spread. So, yeah, I absolutely do. Listen, I expect the Atlanta offense to do their thing, but the Cardinals are getting Tyrann Mathieu back here for this game, and he's missed the last two games. That's a big return for the Cardinals defense.
On to the Carolina Panthers at the Oakland Raiders, 9:25 start time in the UK, and the Panthers are 6-4 on the money line. The Raiders 10-17. The Panthers plus 3 at 20-21. The Raiders minus 3 at 20-23. And this total points line is set at 49.5. The under is 10-11, and the over in the market at 10-11. I think we should actually start this preview by discussing the scheduling quirk. It's something that you talked about with Chris Andrews on your Guessing the Lines podcast published on Monday. It is a negative that the Oakland Raiders have to come back from Mexico City to play this game on Sunday, and the Panthers come into this on the back of a bye. How much does that influence how you approach this line and betting on this match, Gil?
I think it matters, but I think it's built into the line already, right? I think that it's no secret that that's what happened here. So I don't think from a betting perspective that I necessarily think that there's anything missing from the line as is. I do think that the NFL should be asking themselves, what the hell have we done here? Which is, you're basically penalizing the Raiders for, you know, not only their trip into altitude, but the fact that they're subsequent opponent is also coming off the rest, as you just mentioned, the Carolina Panthers. By the way, the Houston Texans, who played that game in Mexico City against the Raiders, also have the same predicament. They're playing a team that's coming off a bye in the San Diego Chargers. So you sort of ask yourself, well, that doesn't sound very fair. And I think it isn't fair. And I think the NFL has to sort of the anti-London, right? When teams come and play at Wembley, it's almost a de facto bye the next week for all those teams. Well, when you play in the altitude of Mexico City, apparently then you get to play a team that's coming off a bye. It's very strange. I think we really should start this discussion, though, Dave, if I may. Oakland against the Texans in Mexico City. I was on Oakland that night, so I say this as a guy who benefited from this. But I've never seen a bigger shaft given to a football team than was given to the Texans in that game. The Raiders should feel so fortunate to win that game. It's unbelievable what happened.
Go on, elaborate, Gil.
Well, there's a few things. One, in case you missed the game, one, DeAndre Hopkins had a touchdown down the left sideline where he was whistled out of bounds. He never went out of bounds, so took 7 points away from the Texans there. And there were two calls. There was another call by the ref late in the game. Houston was trying to convert a fourth down. I think to anybody's naked eye, it was an easy conversion, and yet the referee spotted the ball in such a way that Houston was not given a first down. And so the Raiders took over possession in a key spot there late in the game. And the third thing was just a coaching error on the fact that the Houston Texans coach Bill O'Brien, with 3 minutes left in the game, with only one timeout at their disposal left and a 2 minute warning, Houston chose to punt the ball away to the Raiders down a touchdown. And all the Raiders at that point had to do is convert one first down, which they did, and sealed the game. Very strange on the part of Bill O'Brien. So the Raiders, through a combination of the ref's errors and Bill O'Brien's just ridiculous punt call, ended up winning that game and covering in the process. But what a season for the Raiders. That's just how it's gone for them. They're 8-2 now, facing the Panthers here.
They are 8-2, so going well, the Raiders. The Panthers are 4-6, but they have won 3 of their last 4 games now, Gil. But But they are going to be without linebacker Luke Kuechly, and that is huge for this Panthers franchise because he is the standout player on defense. We talk about players that move the number. We've mentioned earlier on in the podcast that Andrew Luck and Ben Roethlisberger move it by up to a touchdown. Luke Kuechly is huge for this franchise. Not many players away from the quarterbacks in the league can move the number, but he's probably one of them.
I think you're probably right with that. I mean, people should know, as great defensive players, don't move it nearly as much as a quarterback does. But Kuechly probably moved it a point or so. And by the way, you're telling me something. I didn't know that that decision had been made. I knew that they were wavering on Kuechly and concussion protocol. But you're saying he is out now, huh?
I'm just checking now, Gil. I'm just checking. Let's have a look what we've got here.
You may be very right.
I think it's unlikely. So I thought he was already out, but I think it is unlikely. I don't think anything's been confirmed officially yet, Gil.
Okay. You may prove to be right, though. I think you're probably going to end up being right on that, and that's huge. And then, you know, then they've got A.J. Klein, who fills in for him, who's also, I believe, coming off a bit of concussion protocol himself. So, you know, the Panthers are a team, you know, 15-1 last year. No one expected them to go 15-1 again this year, let alone last year to begin with, right? But no one expected their season to fall in as nicely as it did last year. But certainly people thought they were a clear playoff team who would sort of cruise into the playoffs in the AFC South. And just beyond Kuechly, just such a wounded football team with all kinds of injuries. Ryan Khalil, their center on offense, is a huge part of that offense as well, and he is uncertain for this game as well. So if you take out Khalil on offense and Kuechly on defense, you're taking out the heart of both sides of the football for the Panthers. And against a Raiders team that can kind of score at will, you can't really keep up with that kind of offensive production. So you got to like Oakland to win here. Now the spread is the great equalizer, as a guy on my show, Ace, likes to say, and so that's another matter altogether. But I just don't think Carolina has what it takes to win this football game. It's interesting that Carolina now, coming off their bye, they're spending 2 weeks in a row on the West Coast. So they have a game here against the Raiders, and the next week they go and travel to play the Seahawks. They're actually going to stay in the Bay Area between games, sort of the midway point, and they're going to hang out on the West Coast to try to reduce the travel as well.
So leaning towards the Oakland Raiders -3, Gil, but I'm feeling not a confident pick.
Not a best bet for me. Not a best bet, but yes.
On to primetime then. The Kansas City Chiefs at the Denver Broncos is the late game on Sunday. The Chiefs 33-20, the Broncos 10-19 on the money line. The spread is 3.5. The Chiefs +3.5, 10-11. The Broncos -3.5 at 10-11. And the total points, a low number here, 39.5. Under is 10-11 with the over at 10-11. And this is one of the most competitive divisions in football, this one, the AFC West. And both these teams enter the week with a 7-3 record. The Chiefs just marginally ahead, courtesy of their better divisional record. And the Broncos coming into this off a bye, while the Chiefs lost last week against Tampa Bay, despite being heavy favourites. They lead the league in forcing turnovers with 13 interceptions and 9 fumble recoveries. And part of that down to Marcus Peters, who leads the league with 5 interceptions, Gil. But he is banged up, Marcus Peters. Expected to play. He's been practicing, Peters. And given that number, Gil, the total points line here is set at 39.5. Clearly, bookmakers expecting a defensive battle.
Absolutely. And much of that is because the Broncos quarterback is Trevor Siemian. And I don't think he gets, you know, he gets game manager respect at most, right? No one's expecting him to light up the offense on the Denver side of the ball either. But you mentioned Marcus Peters kind of banged up. Tom Bahali for the Chiefs also a little banged up. It's funny, at this time of year, you tend to talk about injuries more than anything. And I've often said this is the most, it's the one thing on my podcast, because I do mine on Mondays and Thursdays, we don't get to cover as much because much of what happens and much of what we learn is on Friday and Saturday and maybe sometimes Sunday morning right before the game. But Jeremy Maclin for the Chiefs, Dee Ford, their linebacker, Dontari Pope, their defensive tackle, and then Charkandrick West, a running back, those guys also sort of banged up. And status unclear heading into this game. So, you know, if Macklin's unavailable, if Peters, as you mentioned, is unavailable, we think these guys are going to play. But if any one of them doesn't, you know, it's a big deal. But, you know, Derek Johnson, their standout linebacker, is expected to play. He's got some soreness from the Achilles tendon. So, listen, everybody's banged up at this time of year. Some teams just more than others. For the Broncos, the big news is that Aqib Talib will play in this game, it looks like. He resumed practicing this week. He had a lower back problem. He hasn't been playing since late October, so it's been a month for him. And Aqib Talib means so much to that Denver's defense. He's able to shut down one side of the ball. Him and Chris Harris are a great cornerback duo for the Broncos. So, listen, Alex Smith and the Chiefs are going to have their work cut out for them no matter what, certainly even more so with Talib on the other side of the field. But this is a rare opportunity for the Chiefs franchise, Dave, because you don't often get to see the Chiefs in prime time. And this is the first Sunday night game of the time of year where they start to flex games that were originally scheduled for afternoons, and they start to pick the most marquee matchup and put them in prime time. So this is the first of those this season. Chiefs and Broncos gets the primetime billing, and we don't often get to see the Chiefs in front of a national audience. So this is big for that franchise.
And I've heard you say on your podcast before with numerous guests that the Chiefs franchise polarizes opinion like no other in the NFL. Why do you think that is, and where do you stand with the Chiefs as a whole, Gil?
Yeah, I don't mean that on a perennial basis, but certainly this year, just anecdotally on my podcast and doing other people's, at least the first 10 weeks of the season, and I haven't really pulled it since, but really for the first 10 weeks of the season, some folks just thought they were super overrated and some folks thought they were super underrated. Chris Andrews, who's on my Monday podcast, has always liked the Chiefs. And, you know, the Chiefs have won even with their loss last week, as you mentioned, to the Buccaneers. They've still won 17 out of their last 20 regular season games heading back into last season. We don't think of the Chiefs as a team that went 17-3. We usually think of the Patriots that way, right? Mm. Or the Seahawks, but the Chiefs have gone 17-3. So Chris has always had a very high opinion of them as a bookmaker and as a guy who just is an observer of football. On the other hand, I have some advanced stats guys who Rufus Peabody, Jeff Ma, who have been on my show through the years. They have always felt the Chiefs to be overrated. And much of that perhaps has to do with the fact that they are able to generate all these turnovers, as you mentioned, Dave. That's the kind of thing that is not a sustainable characteristic for football teams, at least through the prism of advanced stats. Now, there have been teams throughout football history that have made a habit of being able to generate turnovers through the course of an entire football season. The 1983 Redskins are the greatest example of this, if you want to go back into the time machine. That team, which ended up losing in the Super Bowl to the L.A. Raiders back in January of 84, that Redskins team was like plus 40-something in turnovers.
Wow.
It's just unbelievable. It's a record that'll never be broken. And it was just the Redskins would just go plus 3, plus 3, plus 4, plus 2 every week in turnover differential. So, you know, it really depends what your opinion is on football. Is that something that is just simply, you know, something that changes from week to week and is random, whether or not you win turnover battles, or is there something to that? Is there some characteristic about certain football teams that allow them to be better at that skill than others?
I suppose we've seen that with the Seattle Seahawks to a certain extent in the last 4 or 5 years, Gil, and that defense where they will win the turnover battle more often than not.
Yeah, and that defense, I mean, Legion of Boom, right? That defense is, no one's going to argue that defense is great, and that it's almost like they're so good that the turnovers are just going to happen. They're just going to fall into place just because they're so awesome. Mm. That's a totally different thing with that defense, I think. But the Chiefs defense, again, and a lot has to do with, you know, that notion, like, I don't think fans get to see the Chiefs that often, unless you're a Chiefs fan. Unless you live in that area of the country, dead smack in the heartland. I mean, really, if you take a north line and a east to west line and you bisect the United States, the continental United States, right down the middle, there is Kansas City, right in the heart of the country. And now they get a chance for people to really see them on a widespread basis. So this will be interesting for that franchise, for fans to see the Chiefs. And again, 3.5-point dogs here against the Broncos. as you mentioned, very competitive division. The Raiders are 8-2, but if the playoffs were to start tomorrow, this Kansas City-Denver matchup would be the exact matchup we would see in the AFC wildcard game. Uh-huh. So not only are we seeing two division rivals, but this might be very well a preview of a playoff game. Now, there's much football to be played down the stretch here, but right now that's what it would be. I expect a very competitive football game. I think the spread is probably right where it ought to be, and one turnover here or there is going to make the difference.
Final game this weekend on Monday night is the Green Bay Packers at the Philadelphia Eagles. The Packers 17-10. The Eagles are 1-2. The spread is set at 4. The Packers plus 4, 10-11. And the Eagles minus 4 at 10-11. What's going on with the Packers? Trounced by the Redskins last week, and now they've lost 4 in a row to fall to 4-6 on the season, Gil. And they just can't get the opposing offense off the field at the moment, Gil, the Green Bay Packers.
It's exactly what I said on Monday on my show, and it's really true. I had the Packers against the Redskins last week, and I guess I didn't count on the fact that the Packers were going to be down to their third-string linebackers. I mean, it has just got to the point, and Chris Collinsworth, who does color for Monday Night Games, was making this point during the game. He's like, at some point, it just becomes a function of, do you even have the bodies to compete at an NFL level? And certainly at the end of that game last week, they did not. They could not get the Redskins off the field. It's funny because Aaron Rodgers and the offense kind of did their thing. It's sort of like the Cowboys yesterday against the Redskins, right? The Redskins offense is tough to get off the field, but you can score on the Redskins as Aaron Rodgers did. And really towards the end of that game, even with all that happened, the Packers were in backdoor push situation where if they had scored and gotten a 2-point conversion, it would have been a 3-point game. And then they ended up fumbling deep in Redskins territory and the rest is history. But the Packers are so banged up. We've talked about how injuries are such a big deal. Both of these teams, the Packers and the Eagles, just riddled with injuries. You know, the Eagles' top running backs, Ryan Matthews and Darren Sproles, they were knocked out of the Seattle game last week. Sproles probably more likely to play than Matthews. Matthews is a knee injury for this game. So that's a big deal. That's a loss for the Eagles. They may have to rely on a rookie named Wendell Smallwood or Wendell Smallwood for all I know, because I've never said his name before, Dave. And then they've got Leotis McKelvin, one of their top corners in concussion protocol. So the Packers certainly can look at the Eagles and say, well, there's a team that's got a whole bunch of injuries as well. But, you know, at the end of that Washington game, back to the Packers, they had 7 starters out of that game towards the end of that game, including both of their starting corners and both of their starting inside linebackers. So, you know, that makes them move Clay Matthews from outside linebacker, where he's more comfortable, now back to inside linebacker, where he used to play. Injury is just such a big deal. And already they're banged up, are the Packers, in their secondary. So their secondary is already toast. So this is a game comes down to, can Carson Wentz and the Eagles perform at home as they've been performing all season at home, which is to say very well? Because even though the Eagles themselves have lost 5 of their last 7 games, you mentioned the Packers have lost 4 in a row, the Eagles have lost 5 of their last 7, but at home, the Eagles have been particularly good. They're 4-0 at home. They only allow 18.6 points per game in those 4 games, total of 38 points. So small sample size, but certainly at home, they've been a good football team. And you would think that they could have a lot of success against the depleted Packers team here, even though they themselves are depleted. But it's Aaron Rodgers, Dave. And just like with last week against the Redskins, Aaron Rodgers will not be held down. So unless the Eagles can score on offense, Packers are a live dog here as well, even as bad as they looked last week.
I look at those teams they've beaten at home as well, Gil. They've beaten Cleveland, which everyone's beaten Cleveland, but they've beaten Pittsburgh, Minnesota, and Atlanta. 3 very solid teams, and maybe 3 teams that at this moment in time are slightly better than the Green Bay Packers as well. And I don't know if you're a Packers player, you've lost 4 straight games on the road. First time that's happened since 2008. You've made reference to all the injuries they've got within the franchise. How do they get up for this game, knowing that I think right now they've only got an 8% chance of making the playoffs, Gil? It's tough for them.
It is tough. You know, we talked earlier about that Cardinals-Falcons matchup, how both in the case of the Cardinals and the Falcons, it's certainly in the case of the Cardinals, do or die. They lose that game and there's pretty much your season, right? And even in the Falcons' case, you're like, well, if they lose 6-5 and the ghosts of last year sort of creep into their minds, well, this is clearly a game. Green Bay's 4-6, Philadelphia's 5-5. Philadelphia 5-5, and in last place in the NFC East. That's a tough division to be 5-5. Remember, we talked about the Steelers going into yesterday being 5-5 and being in the top, tied for the lead in their division. So Eagles are in a rough division. Basically, if Green Bay and the Eagles are looking at this game, this is it. If you lose here, your season is pretty much done in both cases, if it's not already. So you got to win to keep any hope alive. And Aaron Rodgers has said this week, Dave, he goes, I could see us running the table, meaning winning all the rest of their games. And you sort of giggle at that, but then you're like, well, it's Aaron Rodgers. I'm not going to argue with him. He still might be the single best quarterback in the NFL. He really might be, even in a season where he's missed a lot of passes that he doesn't normally miss. But again, a lot of that is, I sort of blame the Packers front office. They didn't, you know, manage their backfield well. Aaron Rodgers has been playing with a converted wideout, Ty Montgomery, in the backfield for most of the season. And Randall Cobb's been banged up. The personnel hasn't been there for Aaron Rodgers. And yet, again, they scored all those points against the Redskins last week and still were in a position to be competitive at the end, even though the fumble sort of made it on the scoreboard look cosmetically like a blowout. So it's a tough game to call here, too, because you can see the Eagles being as good as they've been at home and running away with it. On the other hand, there's Aaron Rodgers. By the way, Carson Wentz, you know, we talk about small sample size. First four games this season, he was great, right? 7 touchdowns, 1 pick, 103.5 passer rating. Well, in the last 6 games, he's been a rookie quarterback, 72.3 passer rating. 4 touchdowns against 6 picks. So it's a tough game to call. I know it's very easy to look at the Packers on Monday night and say, man, are they terrible? But you never know with Aaron Rodgers.
Are you leaning towards taking the points then with the Packers +4 at 10-11, Gil?
I think this is the quintessential game where if it was on a Sunday, Dave, I would never touch this game. I would never touch it. But it's a primetime game, and if you're asking me for what lean would be, I'll take the Eagles in a slightest of leans.
Yeah, I will as well. The Philadelphia Eagles -4 at 10-11. Just before we wrap and get the pick six at the end of the podcast, Gil, you made mention of a general manager there and the back office. It's not talked about a lot, but it's their job is so important, isn't it? And we've seen a few times when they get it badly wrong, it just affects the whole football franchise.
Yeah, and I, you know, I don't talk about this enough on my show, and maybe it's because we just get wrapped up into the weekly who's going to beat the spread, who's not sort of thing on a week-to-week basis in the NFL. But, yeah, you know, a guy I had on my show last week, Warren Sharp, who's a football handicapper, also does a preseason football guide that everybody should get. But one of the things he does well, and I think this is sort of the deficiency in doing a week-to-week show, is the general manager. The way these football teams has everything to do with allocation of resources to certain units. So there's a salary cap for every one of these teams. It's not like Premier League soccer or baseball in the U.S. where you can spend as much money as you want on your player salaries. In football, each team has a salary cap. You cannot exceed that salary cap. And so you end up having these situations where teams like the Seahawks ended up winning a Super Bowl because they have Russell Wilson on his first rookie deal. And so they're paying their starting quarterback very little money, getting tremendous production out of him. And then they're able to pay lots of money to every other position. And they have this amazing football team as a result. Then when Russell Wilson gets to his second contract and they have to devote so many more resources to him, resources meaning dollars as part of the salary cap, then they have to get more creative with who do they pay and who do they not. In the Seahawks case, they end up not paying their offensive linemen very much. But the brilliance of Russell Wilson allows them to make up for that deficiency because he's just so good that he overcomes it. The flip side of that is the Falcons and the Saints. Matt Ryan, so much against the salary cap. Drew Brees counts for so much against the Saints' salary cap that those teams just aren't able to improve on the defensive side of the ball like they otherwise would be able to if those guys weren't veteran great quarterbacks who, let's face it, you can't cut them, Dave.
Yes.
So how well a general manager deals with that issue on a seasonal basis and a week-to-week basis means so much. And Packers, I think, by anybody's gauge, did not do a very good job of that this year.
let's finish the podcast with a pick six then, Gil. Your six best bets. Obviously, not as many games to go out with the three from Thanksgiving done and dusted, Gil. But what are your six best this week?
Well, I'm going to take one of them. Am I allowed to say one that I already did, or we have to do six moving forward?
We've got to do six moving forward, unfortunately, Gil. But okay. I will let you reflect on the winning pick as well.
Well, the Lions were one of my super contest picks yesterday. And by the way, that was looking dicey until Sam Bradford complied with a wonderful interception late in that game to seal it for the Lions. But the pick six. The Titans are pick number one. The Titans travel to the Bears. What do you have that number at right now?
I've got it at five, Gil, minus five.
Yeah, that's moved up a little because Jay Cutler will not play, as we know, for the Bears. And it's going to be Matt Barkley starting for the Bears tomorrow. And I think this is one of these Titans teams, once again, that, you know, from week to week, they'll break your heart and then they'll look great. And I think this is a week that they look great. I think the Titans offensive line dominates the Bears. And Marcus Mariota gets it done. I like the Titans giving five at Chicago. I do like the Cardinals. We talked about the Cardinals getting 5 points at Atlanta. I like the Cardinals getting those points in a shootout with the Falcons. They're pick number two. The Saints are pick number three. Here's where it gets a little chalky, but I'll take the Saints giving seven at home against the Rams. Saints at home on that turf. I like them to be able to overcome that Rams defense enough in a game where, again, we're going to see Jared Goff for the Rams. And I just don't think that Rams offense with Goff, even against the Saints defense, that is improving, by the way, I don't think the Rams offense can do enough to keep up with the Saints in this game. So the Saints are the pick. It's pick number three. Giants also talking chalk, giving seven at Cleveland. They're going to be pick number four, Dave. It's Cleveland. That's my analysis.
That's enough, Gil.
Pick number five, Dave. I'm going to take the 49ers. I'm going to take a big swallow, big gulp, and I'm going to take the 49ers at 7.5 if you can get the hook.
Yeah.
That's still available. I'm not sure what you're having that here
it's
Friday morning.
7.5, Gil, currently.
Thank you for allowing me to get the hook there. I appreciate that. That's what it is right now. San Francisco plus 7.5 at Miami. That's what it is. We do this about 48 hours, a little more than 48 hours before game time at Miami. Listen, Miami's won five in a row, but San Francisco looked pretty good in defeat against the Patriots last week, and I think they can cover that number. If you're giving me more than a touchdown, I will take the Niners as pick number five. And then pick number six, this is where it gets tough because, as you mentioned, it's a very small slate of games. But Buffalo's giving 7.5 at home to Jacksonville. Now, Dave, I've said many times, why do sharp bettors still keep betting the Jaguars? Why do they keep making this mistake over and over? I'm going to make that mistake right here. I'm going to tell you right now. I'm going to take the Jaguars. I'm going to take the 7.5 at Buffalo. I just think it's too many points. And if Blake Bortles could just stop throwing pick sixes, Jacksonville will cover this game.
I think they're all early games as well, Gil, so you'll know your fate by the afternoon anyway. The Titans minus five, the Cardinals minus five, the Saints minus seven, the Giants minus seven, the 49ers with the 7.5 points, and the Jaguars plus 7.5 as well. Gil, as always, it's a pleasure speaking to you. I hope you had a fantastic Thanksgiving with your family yesterday. Enjoy the football this weekend, and make sure you check out Gil's Twitter handle with all his podcasts posted there. At Beating the Book is Gil's Twitter handle, and mine is at D Kellner. Thank you for your company, Gil.
Dave, thank you. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you, everyone that's tuned into the podcast and listened as well. And if you're having a bet on the American football this weekend, the very best of luck. And do check out the mobile app now as well. A really high-tech scoreboard has been developed by our tech guys, and that's online and on the William Hill app now. So do check that out. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Check out all William Hill's on-demand audio at audioboom.com. Just type in William Hill, and we'll be back next week for week number 13.
Get a £5 free bet every week with Offer Club from William Hill.
Hey-o, let's go, let's go.
Simply stake a total of £20 or more across the week on pre-match football accumulators with four or more selections, and you'll get a £5 free bet on the Friday. Plus, you can get on faster and easier than ever with our new and improved mobile betting experience. Let's go! Join William Hill Offer Club on mobile or online now. When the fun stops, stop.